Good morning, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to KRFY's morning show's Garden Life. My name is Julie Perchinsky, and I'm here with Julie Calamine this morning again. Good morning, Julie.
Hey, good morning, Julie Perchinsky. It's always good to see you, especially on a warm spring day like today.
Oh, boy, what a day. What a day.
I know it. So we love it.
Also in the studio, we have the president of the Bonner County Gardeners Association, Karen Bennett, for the third or fourth time. We can't remember.
Something like that. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, we're so happy you're here. But first, another thing we love to talk about in addition to gardening is the weather.
Well, of course, because the weather is so related to gardening.
Absolutely.
Well, we can't have one without the other, Julie. So I'll have to say I planted some before I get into this. Okay, I'll come back to this. First weather, then I'll come back to my little seed experiments. The weather looks fabulous for this week. Oh, I'm so excited. Today, high of 56, becoming sunny, and then it's cool tonight, but not freezing, 33. And it's like that all darn week.
Woo-hoo.
58s up to 62 and 66 on Friday. Let's just see if I can get a look at the weekend for us all. Yes, and Friday is also sunny, and Saturday, 50% chance of rain. But that's a lot better than what we've been having.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
We've earned it.
Oh, we have.
And
we certainly have.
There is some high wind this afternoon, what I was hearing this morning, so be careful on the water, folks.
Yes, that is true, and I don't actually see that noted in the U.S.
Okay.
in the 7-day forecast from the, from the weather service, but normally they will.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Some gusts as high as 26. That's a little bit windy.
Okay.
But not terrible. Okay, anyway, I'm just every day outside in the sunny days, hoping it doesn't get too cold at night because I directly sowed my lettuce, garden greens, lettuce and spinach and some beets, and I'm just, standing over it, making it want to sprout, but I'm wondering if I'm too early because nothing's happening. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
All
it's
right.
Worth a try. I put my thermometer in there, and I got 52 degrees, so
ooh,
it's starting to get... Yeah. Start to warm up a little bit.
For sure. I just thought, well, spring, the greens, they ought to get going. Hopefully they won't rot in the ground. But these are the things that the Bonner County gardeners just obsess over. So I think we should jump into our topic.
Yes, let's pull Karen in. So Karen Bennett, as I said, is here with the Bonner County Gardeners Association. And this is our gardens season opener show. So Karen's going to throw out the first pitch. And Karen, tell us about your journey in gardening in Sandpoint and also about your garden club.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I didn't actually start gardening until I was in my 30s, and I didn't get any formal training until I joined the Bonner County Gardeners Association by taking their membership classes. So it's like we use the Master Gardener book from the University of Idaho, and the course is very similar. We do have a few differences, but I learned what I didn't know. I thought I was a pretty good gardener, but what they teach you is all sorts of things that you didn't know you needed to know. So shortly after that, I found myself being coordinator of the classes. And then very shortly after that, I found myself as president. So I've had the benefit of taking the entire course a couple times. And every time I learn new things. So it's been great. I'm very passionate about organic gardening, biodynamic agriculture, especially growing fruits and vegetables, which can be pretty challenging in our climate here.
Sure, sure it can. I'm curious to see what the fruit trees are going to look like this year.
Yeah, it's very mild winter.
Yes, it was. I hope it didn't come on too soon. But I love the Bonner County Gardeners Association website. That is just the best website. I got on it over the weekend, and so much information there. But I really like your motto. It's education, community, and camaraderie. And so let's start with the education component. As you said, the membership classes are they required to be a member?
They are.
So that really gives you an educated group of people to work with.
And that's why we do it, is that we have a lot of outreach in the community, that education and community piece. And we have classes that we teach, but as well, we're at the farmers market and in the schools. And so to have the education needed to answer people's questions and at least to direct them to the right places, we need our members to have a good, solid gardening education.
For sure. How many were in the class this year?
I think about 13.
Wow.
Which was a little bit less than some years, but is a great group of students. Mm-hmm. So,
and you're a large group to begin with. There are an awful lot of you out there, so it's not like we're short on Bonner County gardeners. Are you called? You must be called membership gardeners. You're not master gardeners, are you anymore? What is your title now?
We just call ourselves gardeners.
Okay. But you're just like master gardeners. You're just not under that umbrella, that title.
The part that really stuck out to me is that you're just constantly ready to pass on that knowledge. Like at the farmer's market, you're there every week, every other week. What are your plans for the summer?
We are there the first Saturday of each month.
Once a
month.
And
then another wonderful program that we have, we call them home horticulture classes. And for people who can't commit to the membership classes, which is it's 10 weeks for 6 hours a week. So it's pretty intensive. But what we do is offer smaller classes for people. For instance, we have a home horticulture day at the library coming up this weekend, this Saturday. And we will be teaching, I'll be teaching the first portion. And then Art Church, who's just an incredible asset to Bonner's Ferry, Sandpoint area, just a wealth of knowledge, he'll be teaching after me. So I'm going to be teaching the first portion, and that is just how to have a successful garden here in Idaho. We're very challenged, like what works here that we can grow easily. And then Art will be teaching about irrigation and soils.
I'm shocked. I thought he was going to be teaching mushrooms.
You know, he can teach a lot of things. He is an extremely knowledgeable guy.
Oh, boy, that sounds like a great... now, your seeds, will it be varieties of seeds or types of seeds? You know, they have that whole seed library, too.
Absolutely. Definitely, we require shorter season seeds.
Okay.
Because we do have a shorter season than most. So your seed selection within a variety, you know, within a certain plant type is important. But then also, what grows well here? People want to grow watermelon. I usually advise against it. But raspberries, strawberries, there's definitely alternatives that will thrive here versus things you'll struggle with. That's not as much fun.
Karen, let's just back up to the home hort day for a moment. You've let us know that it's Saturday and that it's at the library. What are the times, and do folks need to sign up in advance?
You do not need to sign up. It is free, and it begins at 10 a.m. So I will teach at 10, and then Art will teach at 11 and 12, his two classes.
And this is the adult education that Joyce Jowdy puts on there?
Yes.
Well, great. That'll be a good show.
It's a new partnership that we're trying, so
good.
We think it'll be a win-win, both for the library and for gardening education.
And can folks Zoom in if they want? Will there be a Zoom link? Not for this one.
No, not for this one.
All right.
Do you have any other classes on your website, like home horticulture classes to watch, or what else is on there? Just information for people to go to?
There's a lot of information on there. I think we might try to put some educational videos on in the future. So that might be down the road.
Great.
Nice.
Great. So the civic component is the community. That's another reason you all are membership gardeners. You go out to the community and take care of the community gardens. Tell us a little bit about all the different gardens and how you manage that.
Yes, we work with different gardens such as Christ Our Redeemer, which has a huge, beautiful garden. We also help with the different schools. We have volunteers that are in places like Kootenai, Hope, Sagal, Farman, Stidwell. And we have volunteers at those schools that help the students. They work with the teachers to teach the students about gardening and then to help the schools, give them advice and recommendations. So that's one. And then there's also the Healing Garden.
Yes.
We have a dedicated volunteer at the Healing Garden, and then quite a few other people that help out mm-hmm. and make sure it's weeded and watered and everything looks good.
I think I saw something in the paper that that might be coming up, a big cleaning day there.
There is a cleaning day.
Okay. I'm not sure what day either.
I am actually not sure either.
I'm sure you could find out. It'd be easy enough to find out.
For sure.
All right. Hey, can I back up to the Home Hort series for a moment?
Sure.
We spent a bit of time talking about the membership course, which is an entire winter. It's a commitment. But you mentioned that this coming Saturday, that's a Home Hort event, Home Horticulture mm-hmm. event. But that's kind of Bonner County Gardeners Light, as I might describe it. And that continues on through the summer. Is that true, the Home Hort series?
So we usually offer them. People get busy around here in the summer because
okay.
it's such a beautiful place to be. We usually offer them in the spring and then also again in the fall.
And those are for folks that aren't quite ready for a commitment to the full-on course, but they can come in. And are they normally evenings? When are they?
We used to have them on Wednesday evenings, but we found that that's a little bit hard for most people. So a Saturday morning we thought might be a little bit easier for people that work. And
nice.
And
so folks could find those by looking on your website and looking for the Home Hort.
Yes, we have a calendar of events that has all of our fun events that we have coming up, and it's on our website.
But they're really helpful because they're short and to the point and really hit on some of the kind of really
yes.
important topics you might be thinking about if you're just getting going in gardening.
For sure.
Well, we have found that if people's garden fails, the first thing I usually ask them is about water. And so how much they're getting watered. We live in not just a cold climate, but a climate that doesn't get rain in the summer. And I think most people underestimate mm-hmm. how much water the plants need. And then the second thing is really soil nutrition. I'll say, well, when did you fertilize it? And sometimes they look at me puzzled. And then we know we found the culprit. So that's usually two of the most common problems.
Two biggies, for sure.
And they'll come to the farmer's market and ask you these questions because you're there the first weekend of every month and ready to answer.
Right. We put one very experienced gardener there and then maybe a younger one that's newer to the mm-hmm. the gardening program. And they're there to answer all sorts of questions. And if they don't know the answer to the question, they know where to direct you.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I'm not sure which group helps out with the extension department over by the fairgrounds. Is that Bonner County Gardeners or is that the Master Naturalists?
Usually it's the University of Idaho's
master
program.
Master Naturalists help out, but the Master Gardeners do too.
Yes.
Okay. But it's another resource for beginning gardeners.
That's right.
Yeah. Not a topic for today, but one to think about.
That's probably where the gals who don't know the answer to the question, the gals and guys, they'll probably use them because they're a fantastic resource, too.
Those guys, too. They
so
sure are.
So much information.
Sure are.
So the last thing is the camaraderie or sharing the bounty. I'm sure on your events calendar, you have a very important event coming up in May.
We do.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, twice a year we do a big plant sale, the spring plant sale in May. It's always Mother's Day weekend on the Friday and Saturday, and it's usually from 9 to 3, although sometimes we linger longer. But we have plants that are donated by members of our organization, which we have usually between 60 and 100 active members at any time. So there's a lot of people. And we grow plants all spring and divide perennials. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's really cute art and tools and all sorts of other things besides plants, but primarily things that we, you know, work well in our area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's important is that we know the things that grow well here. And that's what we try to provide. Sometimes you can find unique blackberries that may have been here for centuries. And so, not centuries, I mean decades. And so, centuries, holy cow. So, but, you know, decades that they've found and that they've divided and shared. And so mm-hmm. these are tried and true plants. And so when people buy them, they know they're getting something good.
And the location of this sale?
It's at the Pondere Event Center parking lot.
Okay, same place. Okay. Yeah,
that's where we have it. And rain or shine.
We'll May 8th and 9th.
May 8th and 9th.
Wonderful. Can't wait. And what about the garden tour? Haven't seen any information about that yet.
Yeah, we just put it on the website.
Okay.
And that's going to be July 11th from 9 to 3. And again, that information's on the website.
Okay.
As time gets closer, you can buy the tickets on the website, and then you just arrive at any one of the gardens. And if you haven't purchased your ticket online, you can purchase it at any of the gardens. We usually put the maps up a few days in advance so that people know where to go.
Great. Can't wait.
It's the best.
That's the best.
Great
you
event.
Usually volunteer at that event somewhere.
I do. Full disclosure, I'm a member. I hope I'm a member in good standing. I better check my checkbook record and see if I'm up to date. But yes, that's a thing that I'm always excited to help out with. And At one point I was helping with the Sagal School Garden, but that's now Don Childress and another person. So I'm not doing that one anymore. But they're all fun. Anything you volunteer for with the Bonner County Gardeners is usually pretty satisfying.
Yeah. One thing that we had planned this year is kind of exciting is the organizers have decided to do 3 gardens south of the bridge for all the Sagal folks and people that want to go on an adventure from the north and vice versa, 3 up on the north side of the bridge.
Wow.
So we thought nice. That would be, you know, kind of fun for people.
Is it one day?
It's one day.
One day.
It's one long, busy day
yes,
for most
is.
Of us.
There's a lot to see for the customers, too. It's like, wow.
We like to add a lot of diversity in the gardens, too. So uh-huh. You'll have more complex gardens and then sometimes very simple ones. And a lot of people like to see a more simple garden because they say, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I can do. And mm-hmm. You get ideas, and it's really beautiful.
It is.
Yeah. And Karen, would you say that that's your biggest fundraiser for the organization or not necessarily? Because it is a fundraiser for you all.
It is. And the plant sale,
oh,
I would
yes.
say. And, you know, the money that we raise is it's really important for us to be able to give back to the community. We do have grants for different projects that people will need. And there are a lot of gardens that, you know, might need extra soil.
Yes, you're all
seeds.
Of your public gardens all over the county right. as well, or the area.
Yeah, and there yes. are some other private garden, not private, but like other organizations, nonprofit organizations that we do help with as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important that's to be able to help give to those.
That's
sure.
right. Yeah, you're a not-for-profit, so none of the proceeds are going into any of you board members' pockets. Obviously, it's all going back
yes.
to the greater good of the gardeners, which is really cool.
Well, okay, so that's kind of the business portion of the meeting. Now, Julie, we get to the fun part.
All right,
let's
well,
talk about...
Should we save it for after a song break?
I think we'll do a song break, and then we've got Pam Duquette coming in for the Dark Skies talk.
Oh, I didn't realize.
We'll
so we've got
right
to keep moving here.
8:30, but first,
okay.
let's talk about what's happening in our gardens. Let's talk about our garden life. Julie, tell us what's going on in your garden.
Well, for me, guys, it's spring cleanup, you know, getting the extra detritus out of the garden that I left in the fall and trimming back some canes of my berries, things like that. And I already mentioned I've planted those early greens that I'm watching like a hawk. A little bit of pruning of fruit trees and other shrubs that can be still be pruned right now. And then just thinking about what's going to go in. I'm thinking about what tomatoes are going to go in. And, the Bonner County Gardeners' tomatoes are some of the greatest.
Oh.
I have a friend, my friend Barbara in town, wants me to speak to you and find out if she can reserve any of those and get in touch with the lady who supplies them. So she wants a preferred status for those tomato plants. But that's about it. That's what
okay.
I'm thinking about.
Karen, what do you have going in your garden?
Well, I have a very large greenhouse, and I start my plants inside. I do grow some for sale, as well as I do donate quite a few to the plant sale.
Mm-hmm.
So she can always call me.
Oh boy!
Okay.
So. Are you the tomato person? I think
I'm
you
one
might
of
be.
Them.
Yes.
Yeah. So I start mine quite early. I have a lot already in 1 gallon pots that I probably started too early. As gardeners, just like you,
always.
I am always chomping at the bit. And every year I put on the calendar, start 2 weeks later. Then I get nervous and I start too early. But I do have a lot of things growing. I start a lot inside and then transition them out, which I haven't done yet. I'm still waiting because after this beautiful week of sunny weather, I saw a week of cold and rain.
Yes, yes.
So
it's always possible.
Yeah. And we get so excited on a sunny day, but it's Idaho.
That's right. That's right. I saw this morning coming in that the forsythias have leafed out or bloomed out. And that happened overnight. So that's one thing that's happening in my garden.
So there's an interesting thing called phenology, and it's a study of watching nature to know when to plant things. And people ask me a lot. I do have a soil thermometer, but I have a lilac. Mm. And they say when the lilac leaves out, you can plant your cold season crops. And when a lilac blooms, you can plant your warm season crops. So it's sort of using nature as your guide to know when it's time.
It's like the rhythmic sequence of events over the year and watching those. Yeah, phenology is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Julie, our next month should be a phenologist.
Yes, let's do that.
I know a couple.
Okay, good.
Yes.
I did a soil test. That was something I did last week and sent it into Midwest Laboratories we were talking about earlier. So I'm curious what the heck happened last year after I behaved and did everything he told me to and hoping I got everything aligned again.
Boy, fingers crossed. I hope you'll forward it to us all and see what the results look like.
People are on the edge of their seats about this whole soil sample business.
I know it.
I do have seeds in the ground. I planted peas. I planted spinach. I planted in my cold box. Mm-hmm. I planted some lettuces and things like that. And I planted my tiny baby little seedlings that are up. And I think I was too late. I took too long to get out there and get busy.
Oh.
It was just kind of a no energy kind of winter.
Yeah,
so I
get it.
Get going.
For your cold weather crops, are you covering them at all
nope.
with plastic? You're just going to let her rip?
Yeah, every man for himself.
Okay.
That's right. It's garden of the fittest.
I thought I'm getting so, impatient. I thought maybe I'd start covering them and force them to get going.
Well, that's not a bad idea.
No.
Yeah. But that's what I've got going. Let's see. I finished spraying, did some trimming, and there's a lot going on. It's finally dry enough to get out. I'm always too early and stomp around and pick up mud. And
your soil can get a little compacted.
I have to really settle down and wait till it dries. But I think it's kind of there.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's too early for things like asparagus or any mm-hmm. of those fun things. But I will say that the rhubarb in my backyard has well up. It's about 8 inches up, and it always looks so fun when you see the rhubarb coming up.
Definitely. Definitely. And the raspberries have little leaves on them. And
they sure do. Yeah. Yes. And the pussy willows have come and gone mm-hmm. in my yard. That's mm-hmm. nice.
This
is phenology talk now. And the swallows are here.
Yeah, I saw the swallows. And we have a peregrine. No, not a peregrine. A falcon. A merlin, we think, in our neighborhood that's back.
Nice.
A mama and papa and maybe a young one from last year.
Nice.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Nice for us, but not so nice for the songbirds in the neighborhood.
Oh, the starlings can take it.
There's enough
of them.
That's it. Good attitude.
So let's wrap back around. Karen, tell us everything that's happening coming up with the Bonner County Gardeners Association.
Okay.
Starting with this weekend.
Yeah, this Saturday is our collaboration with the library. Mm-hmm. So we have the classes. And then we also have, and I should put a little mention too, the library is doing an Earth Day on the 25th. And we will have a table there with some Ann Warwick and Janae Dale, two longtime amazing gardeners. We'll be teaching about composting and vermicomposting.
Excellent.
Using worms to make compost. So that's coming up. And then we have the plant sale.
Plant sale in May.
Right,
Mother's
in May,
Day.
8th mm-hmm. and 9th. Mm-hmm. Yes, and then the garden tour.
Right.
July 11th.
July 11th. So,
and just, I don't think I mentioned, but our website is bcgardeners.org. So the letter B, the letter C, gardeners.org.
And okay.
So you can reach us there.
Everything's right. There.
And if a person, even though they haven't gone through the courses, wants to become a social member, they could do that at any time. Is that true? Or do they need to wait for course?
Unfortunately, you have to take the
course.
Okay. Yeah.
Good to know.
I think the idea that it bonds everyone through that course to begin with, and then they're ready to go out in the community and share it.
And we do have a lot of fun, and we have a lot of potlucks, and we get together a lot.
Great.
So we have a lot of fun as a as an organization, too.
All right.
Yeah, and so, Karen, if a person wanted to test out your group without going through the full series of courses, is there a way they can join you? Would you recommend they just come to the Home Hort series, go to the plant sale? What would you advise?
Well, they're welcome to visit us. We have a monthly meeting on Thursdays at 9. It's the first Thursday of the month at 9 a.m. And they're welcome to come sit in one of our board meetings. We call it a board meeting, but it's actually become a bit of a party meeting.
Good.
And we encourage people to come. We do fun things like tomato tastings at the end of the season.
Wow.
Everybody brings tomatoes in. We cut them up and put them on plates and do taste testings. And so we do have fun things that we do.
Great.
And it's a great way to find out things that are going on in the community, because there's, you know, we have a lot of announcements. And also it's a great time for people just to get questions answered. We have a lot of newer members who just don't feel comfortable yet, even though they've taken the course. And we have a lot of members with 60 years of gardening experience that are just incredible resources in all types of gardening. So
All right. Grab them while you can, those people with all that experience.
That's right.
I should mention that's at the Pondere Events Center. It's at our office, and it's on the website, too.
Okay.
So if they want to find us, we're on the website. So.
Well, how great to have you on, Karen. I really appreciate you coming in this morning and telling us everything that's happening with our, really, the premier garden club in Sandpoint. It's just so great.
It was great, thank and you. You shared so much, and it's getting me excited about the season of gardening. So thank you, Karen.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well,
and we're back. Thanks for joining us here on KRFY 88.5. This is the morning show, Garden Life Edition. I'm here with Julie Calamine. My name is Julie Puchinski, and we have a new guest in the studio.
We sure do. It's Pam Duquette. She's known under a lot of different hats. She wears a bunch of hats, but today she's going to be sharing with us some extensive information that she knows about our night skies, and it's really fascinating. Hi, Pam.
Hi. I am not a Julie.
The only non-Julie, but we still love you, though.
Why, thank you.
That's right.
So nice to be here in this reality of dark skies, because it's so important.
Well, introduce that whole your whole journey into the
My
dark
whole
sky
journey.
Movement.
Oh, boy. I will tell you that, well, as a child who hasn't been fascinated with the stars in the skies, if you're lucky enough to live in a rural area that you can see the sky, I learned that like 20% of people live in areas they do not see the Milky Way, which the Milky Way to me is one of those things, we're part of it, and you lie on the ground and you look up and you see it, and it's like, how are we part of that? But to not be able to see that should be a crime. So that's why I am interested in dark skies. Plus, I taught in my teaching career, I taught in Alaska, who has dark skies a lot. And I taught in Ketchum and Stanley, Idaho, South Central. They are part of the Central Idaho Dark Sky Reserve. It's about, let me see, I've got the acreage here. It's like 106,000 acres of area that covers Stanley and Ketchum, where I taught. And in 2017, Ketchum received a national recognition as the first city in Idaho to be designated as an international dark sky community.
What does that mean?
to be a dark sky community,
yeah,
you have certain light fixtures, you have certain lights, you have certain rules you follow. You have to, the town has to have, the city has to have a code on dark sky lighting, and you have to follow it. It needs to be enforced, and you have to care. You know, you have to want to promote the quality of life that dark skies offer. And there is research out that shows that light pollution affects people also. And it affects, you know, everything affects our health somehow. But let me find that research. Mm-mm. You can ask me another question while I'm looking for it, because I don't want to get it wrong. Oh, exposure to artificial light at night negatively affects human health, including increased risk for obesity, depression, sleep disorders, diabetes, breast cancer, and more. Because we adhere to a circadian rhythm, our biological clocks, and I bet a lot of you realize when it's dark early, I go down.
Mm-hmm. I do.
when it doesn't get light in the morning, I sleep in. Mm-hmm. And so now is my time. It's like I can get up at 5:30 and it's light out and I can stay up reasonable time.
And it's it's part of our natural human rhythm, as you say, and it's normal. And
it's normal. It
keeps us healthier.
So that's the human effect.
Yes.
What else is affected by the light pollution?
Well, birds, their migratory path gets interrupted if they have too much light exposure, because they travel by the sky, by the stars and the moon. And think about the explorers. They didn't have all the fancy tools to cross the oceans, know what they were doing. They used the stars and the moon. They could tell direction where they were going. And as a gardener, nighttime pollinators also travel by the sky. And we were just talking briefly. I know we got off task on why I got into this, but the moths and all the nighttime pollinators, like 60% of our pollinators are on the night shift. Mm-hmm. And they need that light from the sky, from the heavens. And if they don't have it, they keep their backs to it so that they know to fly up. Otherwise, they attract to the lights. And like you were saying, they go around and around and they get dizzy, and they usually die of exhaustion if a predator doesn't pick them off.
Yeah, and so they're not pollinating, that's for sure.
That's right, they are not.
Around your night light, right, and all that kind of thing.
Right, so that's the gardening part. But back to back to Ketchum, I guess. When I taught there, they were in 2017, and that's when I went there, that they became the first dark sky community. And I did things with kids, like we went out and looked at the lights in neighborhoods and had the kids, after they learned about it, find out what lights are right and what lights are not to code. And then they had to make, I should have pictures, they had to make lights that they thought would be dark sky approved. So it was fun.
Yeah. Yes. And Pam, tell us what kind of lights are good night sky lights, because this is new information for me. How about you, Jules?
I've been on the website and it's just so much information.
There is so much.
Pam says with her,
I've got papers.
Her teacher file here, right, with all these papers. It's a big deal. I did find the five different, how do you bring your lights into compliance on the website. And I thought maybe that might be something that is interesting.
Interesting. First, your lights should be useful. You use the lights only if it's needed.
Right.
You have
a purpose.
Exactly, a purpose. Mm-hmm. They need to be targeted, so the direct light falls only where it's needed. And there's a thing called light trespass. So if it trespasses on your neighbor, that's not a good light to have, because your neighbor doesn't want lights necessarily. They should be low level, no brighter than necessary. And I think the lumens, they talk about 1,000 lumen or less. And like you were talking, Julie, the color, not the bright white, but the blues and the greens. And there's I'll go all over the place. There's a town in Denmark who is experimenting with red lights. And they've got red lights on their crosswalks, and they're using red street lights. And they are to protect the migratory birds, the pollinators, the nighttime animals, and for people, for their health as well. And it's working for them so far, which is kind of, I know, that'd be pretty
progressive. And the red keeps the migration on track.
Mm-hmm. Because those lights don't bother. Just like the headlights that you can buy now, the headlamps that have
red. Sure, the red.
And a camping.
Oh.
Did they learn that from Amsterdam?
Perhaps they did. It wasn't Amsterdam, but one of those cities. Okay, so back to the lights. They have to be controlled, so you use it only when it is needed. So you could use timers or motion detectors. And warm colored, like we were talking about, blue, violet, to the least amount needed. And I know, Julie, you had asked me before where you can find those lights. I have to introduce you to Dark Sky International. It's darksky.org. You can find out anything you didn't even think you needed to know on this website. And they have a section where you can hit and learn about lights for animals, lights for pedestrians, lights for streets. There was one more.
Commercial,
mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And then they'll show you all the different, there's so many different, but they mostly aim down and they have a shield around them. And they'll tell you where you can get them too. So you just have to get onto this amazing, amazing website.
And I was kind of disappointed that they didn't have, well, maybe there is somewhere, I didn't go in depth into it, that there aren't like covers you can put on an existing light. Because, you know, everyone's already kind of got their porch light. And there's nothing on that site that I could find that
would help you adapt.
Yes. Work with what you already have. Right?
You can change the light bulb.
Yes.
However.
That's
and
a good
I
point.
Found there's a company called Miracle LED. And that you can order them on Walmart. Mm. And they have the orangey, yellowy kind of bulb that you could replace. But when I bought my porch light, was Dark Sky approved, but it's encased. Mm. So I can't take it open and change the bulb. So I just turned it off. I just don't have it on anymore. Mm. It's light enough in town, mm-hmm. I think.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Pam, you've raised two questions for me. First one is, do people sometimes object to the idea of a darker neighborhood or, you know, darker night skies for safety reasons? And how do we respond to those concerns?
Oh, I am not afraid of the dark. My Dark Sky shirt says, don't be afraid of the dark.
No, sure, you're not. But there are people
I get
who
it.
Want.
Well, so lights that are under 1,000 lumens. If you really think you need to have a porch light on, an amber color light that you can still see. And, you know, I read something about, I don't have that study, but I read about when your house is dark, people who are going to rob you or something. No, that's wrong. Never mind. If it's lit,
that you can't see them. All
right.
You can see is where that light is. They did have that on the website.
Is that what it was?
They showed a guy in the
hiding in the bushes.
Right,
right.
And with the light on. And, of course, it was a bright, bright, bright.
Right. And then you can, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, there was.
But it is a conversation because a lot of people will leave their lights on all night for that reason.
Yes.
And that's something that's going to have to be figured out.
And so
that
would be, you could have a motion sensor if somebody comes to your door
you
or is walking around.
Yes.
Or a timer on.
Yeah. Yes, a timer.
To make it.
Yeah.
And so Sandpoint does have a dark sky ordinance, which I would like to talk about briefly.
Yes.
And you can find out about it at www.sandpointidaho.gov/building. And on the webpage, it's in the under the building department. On the left-hand side of the page, they have links. And the very bottom one says Dark Sky. And I have to hand it to Jason Welker, did a great job of going through all of the issues and why we would like to be dark sky compliant. He's listed the five principles, like we just talked about it. He writes why it's important for Sandpoint to protect natural heritage and nightscapes. He talks about the environmental and wildlife benefits. energy efficiency and cost savings by not using so much electricity, community identity and quality of life. So you can really find and supporting responsible development, because it's all about building now, you know, the new buildings that they become dark sky compliant. So that's where you can find out that information.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware that Sandpoint had a dark sky.
A lot of people were not. Yeah. I don't think I even knew it until I got on council and started looking through the codes. And I'm like, uh-oh.
How long has it been in place? Oh,
2000, maybe 17, 18, around that time.
Yeah, so a while. And
it was supposed to be enforced by 2025.
Yeah, so they gave it a forward deadline.
Mm-hmm. Right, which is now why, when it was brought to everybody's attention, that it's time to let's work on it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think people are thinking about it. I look in my neighborhood, I have three houses across the street that always had lights all night. And they were shut off.
That's
so
crazy.
People are becoming aware and being conscious of it.
Well, I have one neighbor across the street who's got blue, greenish lights at night now. So I think that sounds compliant.
Mm-hmm. It would be. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Will it be an enforceable ordinance at some point or not really?
Yes, it's going to be. I mean, it's an ordinance that needs to be enforced, and they are going to work on it. And it was presented to the council that they would do some public outreach and education first, and then try to enforce. Start. And how? That's not my job.
Sure.
but that's things you can call the city and ask to speak to Jason in the planning department or one of the building.
Sure.
Pete's gone. He's a building official. He's been working with Avista on the lights in town. So
Avista's a big player in this.
It is a big player.
Have they committed to the dark sky? I mean, what is their stance?
Well, let me see. I asked these questions.
Yes.
I asked if the streetlights could be lowered, if they can have shields on them, can they be dimmed, and are the lights up to the dark sky enforcement or up to Avista? The answers I got was the height of the streetlights is set by traffic safety. There's a formula in the dark skies code. Shields are no longer commercially available, I am told. They can't get any more liability issues. I'm not sure why that is. Can they be dimmed at late hours? I asked. The lights can be set to different light power, but they're not able to be dimmed on a timer, the ones we have now. Changing the light output requires manually adjusting the fixture, so it's a bit of an issue. And with the exception of a few lights in town, I was told the lights have been upgraded and brought up to code as they have replaced them. So we figure we're about 95 to 99% lights are no longer bulbs but LED fixtures. He was going to look into some more information for me because I talked about the red.
Yeah, the
red
colors.
Lights,
yes.
Right. So they're open to,
well,
to
good.
Working.
They're working on it
they
anyway.
They are.
That's
good.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's
in
great.
In fact, we are going to have another dark sky proclamation. I read that in 2022, there was also a dark sky proclamation when Mayor Ronstadt was in charge. And that was brought by Sue Ann Ellis, who's a representative and advocate for Dark Sky International, which is what I'm becoming as well. Her son came to me when I first got on the council and asked if he could come and request a dark sky proclamation. So he came in June and he's coming again. We are having Dark Sky Week this year is the 13th of April. That week, and it coincides with, guess what?
International Dark
Sky.
No. What?
Why would we have
Earth Day?
No.
15th.
Dark Sky.
Is
why does it change?
No,
that's Doomsday.
We can stay up all night and work on our taxes under the stars.
Yeah. So it's in April, so it's around all that, but it's the new moon. Oh, so it's when the skies is cool. The darkest.
Wouldn't it be cool if they just shut all the lights off like 10 minutes and then just so people could see what Nebraska looks like?
Yeah. Yay, Nebraska. And so also then, so we're going to have another proclamation by Mayor Grimm. And then we're going to do Sue Ann Ellis, who I spoke of, is going to do a library glass case display from April 22nd to May 26th as a designated dark sky community glass case. And Earth Day, April 25th, she is also going to have a booth, table at the library. Yes. And one other thing that's coming up that you might not know about yet, but Monarch Butterfly, we're doing a celebration in the city. I'll talk more about that another time. But she's also going to come to that at Matchwood and have a table with. So all the information is going out there.
That's cool, Pam. Now you're making my mind go sideways, of course. It happens when the three of us get together.
Because that's where I am.
That's right. But, we haven't seen many or any monarchs around this part of the region. Hopefully soon to see more. But do you happen to know if they're nighttime migrators or are they daytime?
Yes, and they are in peril because of part of that also.
Okay.
Where is my information on
that? We sure would like to see a few monarchs in our region.
Yes, we
would.
So waiting. And so you were involved with the monarch movement as well.
Yes.
Are the milkweeds coming up we planted last year?
They're not up yet. Okay. No, it's too early.
Okay.
But for animals, I read that the light pollution interferes with reproduction. It increases predation, disorients migration for species like the monarch butterflies and others that navigate using the stars and moon. And we mentioned the birds, and lighting up the night sky for birds can cause them to migrate too early, too late, or to wander off course, which might be what the butterflies have done. Oof. So if you think about it, all of us humans, with all of our lights, are kind of messing up the ecological balance in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody won't believe the same, perhaps, but maybe if people get a chance to see the Milky Way and wonder how we could be part of it.
Yes.
Or even Orion or the Big Dipper in those wintertime skies that are so much fun to identify as they go over it during the long, long nights.
Yep. And the past couple nights have been nice and lit with sky, with stars and planets. If you're out, I like to sit in my hot tub and watch when my neighbor's lights are off.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. commercial buildings are part of this as well.
They are.
Because that's usually, they're the culprits is in what I see is the
mostly,
darkest.
Right. And so that's problem. With the whole ordinance in the city only. You know, Dover would have to have an ordinance, and then Bondurant, and then Kootenay, and in order to really get to be like a dark sky reserve, like Ketchum and Stanley are.
Are you going to send out mailings?
That's a great idea.
What's your next step as far as before the proclamation to get people aware of what's happening?
It wouldn't be able to be before now because April. Well, just like in the city billing utilities, how they just sent out the information they did branch pickup, but the closure of the city hall came out on that. And that's a great way that I always question, can we put it out that way?
Yes. Yes, because we did get our dump information, but that was a different mailing.
Yeah, right. The new new recycling.
Right.
I know we could talk about that too. I could have 2 hours with you ladies, and we could solve all the problems.
But if we would just circle back to night skies for a minute. Now, about a year ago, sorry, ladies, I know
that's
we're
okay. No, you're good.
About a year ago, and Julie remembers this, we had a professor from University of Washington in Pullman. So, for folks with little ones that maybe want to have them experience a planetarium or a big, big telescope, that's an opportunity. We don't really have it up here, but we do within a few hours. So that might be something for kids to experience and understand what they're missing.
At the U of I Extension, they do have a big telescope.
Oh, they
do? And wasn't it 2 years ago, Julie?
It was through the astronomy
Cool.
Club or whatever. Yes, they did it a couple of years ago, but when I asked Kyle about it, he doesn't really say if it's a schedule thing or just happens hit or miss. But there must be an astronomy club in Sandpoint that has that.
Well, I haven't found it, but maybe there is.
Be something to look into again, because that was amazing.
Yes.
They had it in a little like igloo kind of thing, and it opened, and you could go in there and look at the sky. It was pretty.
Well, maybe we need an astronomy club, and then that will get folks a little more interested in the night sky. But a year ago, I did look for an astronomy club here in town and didn't find one. Mm-hmm. So maybe something for the future for
the
city.
Library, I was told, has telescopes.
Ooh.
Lending library is amazing.
Well, when we head over on Saturday to learn about spring gardening, we can see if we can check out a telescope, guys.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
Where would you put it up in town? Where do you think the darkest place in town? City Beach?
You know, how about when the Northern Lights...
There you go.
I hopped on my bike and rode all over town thinking I could find a nice place that was dark. Somebody told me to go down Sand Creek Trail, which I did not because they told me after. I drove up Baldy and tried to park at the disc golf course, and it was pretty good there. So maybe up there disc golf course would be a good place.
That's not a bad idea.
Until they develop all around it.
So that igloo, is that to cut out all the light when they put it inside an igloo like that?
I have idea.
You always see that
dome.
It's in a dome top. Thing, and then
yes.
Probably.
Probably.
Because it covers all the light.
Sure.
I do want to share that there are 270 dark places around the world. So this Dark Sky International is international. There are 22 countries on 6 continents. And we have 24 dark sky cities in the United States.
Good deal.
Do you want to know what the first one was?
Sure.
Arizona.
I'll be darned.
Flagstaff, Arizona had the first one. And that was in 2001. So this is all kind of recent, new. Uh-huh. Right. People were just realizing what our lights are doing to ourselves and to our animals, our pollinators.
Well, I hate to be the enforcer of the group, guys, but here I am. We're down to about 4 minutes of our hour left. I think we need to ask Pam to summarize.
Yes.
Give us the dates and the...
The
dates again.
All right. I will say that you can also look up idahodarksky.org to find out about the Dark Sky Reserve that covers the whole central part of the state. And when you're traveling through the state, stop and hang out in the Stanley Ketchum area because the skies are absolutely amazing.
Wow. And it's just darn gorgeous anyway.
Yeah, it is. Great, for sure.
Great town.
Yes. For sure. And I brought you ladies some brochures since you said you did not know some things. And like I said, look up the darksky.org because they are amazing. Okay. Dates and contacts. Okay. www.sandpointidaho.gov/building is a web page, has all the information that I kind of briefly outlined. There will be a glass case in the library.
April 20th
We couldn't get it when we wanted it. April 22nd to May 26th. Okay. Joyce was very kind to squeeze us in. And it'll show, kind of focus on becoming a designated dark sky community, if that's something that we find out we want to do as a community. Earth Day, April 25th, a booth at the library, and the city council meeting on the 15th, Kodiak Ellis, who is Sue Ann's brilliant son.
That's May 15th. April 15th.
And that's at the city council
City council meeting. He will present a short presentation again, and the Mayor Grimm will do another proclamation, because Dark Sky Week is the 13th through the 17th. And nobody's done any fancy anything, but if we all weren't so busy with everything else, it's something to think about, because I do remember in 2022, a high school student did bring that information to the then city council, and she had organized a week-long something through the high school.
Yeah. All right. Well, great, Pam. Right. Thank you so much for coming in. Oh, my gosh. We need a couple of days with you.
We do. We need to get back on a garden show again and talk about the nighttime pollinators, because that is where my head was going with all of this as a gardener.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for another edition of
Garden Life.
Here it is. We're going to go to a short station ident and then on to a song that Julie picked for this morning, and that will be Vincent with Starry, Starry Night.
Thank you, ladies.
Thanks, Pam.
Thanks, Pam.
Pam Duquette. So here we go, guys.